welcome everybody to this session, which is designed to be a beginner's guide to artificial intelligence in financial advice. I'm delighted to be joined today by Simon Cowley, Paul Miller and Claire Bell, and I'll come back to the three of them in just a few moments. A few housekeeping things for us to go through. Hopefully these days everybody is used to working with Teams, although our dear friends in Seattle do of course have the habit of rolling out things over an extended period of time, and you can frequently fire it up in the morning and find you've got a completely different version to the one you had yesterday. Key points I am going to call out, please, and I don't think we've had anybody do this on this session, which is really appreciated. But please don't record this session. There will be a full transcript that we will, full recording will be published, and highlights will be published on the advisorsoftware.com website after the event. We ask that you don't use your own recording tools. Basically, sorry, I've got to take my take the distractions off. But basically, so that we have got consent from everybody in the meeting for you to be recorded, and nobody else will have that consent. So if anybody records a meeting separately, it's a GDPR breach. And as I've got my lawyer on the call, I don't possibly not stop anybody who does that. It's not us, it's GDPR. And anyway, we will publish the session on the advisorsoftware.com website. If you're not registered on that website, I would urge you to do that during the discussion. This is very much aimed to be an open session. So if you've got any questions you want to ask, please raise your hand. We'll bring you into the conversation. Also, do please add comments in the chat. Normally in these sessions, we get a very active discussion in the chat, and I will endeavour to come to anybody that raises questions in the chat. I've just covered that. It's an open session, so we would highlight. We will ask you a series of questions as we go along, because these help us better design future sessions for you. On the subject of future events, any of you, many of you will be on the call who have come to our Empowering Advice Through Technology conference. For example, Mr. Miller is a very regular delegate. I'm sure we'll endorse how good it is. If you're a returning advisor, there is a code on the screen right now that can get you a discount. If you haven't been before and you want to come, there's a new attendee code as well. And Jesse will be following up. When you get your feedback forms, we'll be confirming the codes to register for that. Other events we're running in the next few weeks are Protection Forum on the 3rd December. How did we do in 2024, and what are your wishes for 2025? It's worth mentioning the last few protection events we've run, or certain protection events post the budget. There's a huge amount of interest from wealth advisors, because all of a sudden inheritance tax and pensions and everything else. I had one advisor say on one of our sessions 2 days ago, they've had more inquiries from clients since the beginning of October than they'd had in the previous couple of years, and a whole load of clients who they've been trying to convince that they've got inheritance tax problems for several years. Now all of a sudden they're waking them up. Our next tech forum will be on Consumer Duty 18 months in. As you're a Consumer Duty Alliance group today, you may well be interested in that. And we have now protection forums for CDA, and we'll be particularly looking at business protection, which I think is a really important issue for wealth advisors. If you've got all those wealthy clients, those are all the things we are doing next year. People like to know what our that's the first half of next year, so we'll send that information out to people so they can register for future sessions if they want to. When you get the feedback forms from today, you'll get the opportunity to suggest any other subjects. Every one of those sessions is something that's been suggested by one or more advisors involved in the sessions that we run. Today, we're going to be talking about AI in financial advice specifically, because this is aimed to be a beginner's guide, exploring the different types of AI that there are, look at how they're used generally in society, look at how they can be used in financial advice. We will talk about the ethics and data issues in relation to artificial intelligence. Mr. Miller is a tremendous expert on that. Other advisors on the call are also going to talk to us about their experiences. And this is very much a session for sharing best practice. Can I stress, if you've got a system provider that you've been working with, and feel free to share your experiences, hopefully very positive ones. If you've been struggling with things, we don't mind you saying that either, or identifying where things are not. This is all about collective learning and helping the advisor community. We're going to look at forms of advice, and we'll also look at where you can actually get, where you can find more information on AIs to help advisors. I'm very quickly going to show you that actually. Again, I mentioned advisorsoftware.com earlier. That is a site that you can go to if you want to discover new AI tools. Just go to Discover New Tech, AI Tools and Services, and you will see that brings up a whole load of details of firms that are offering AI for financial advice. And then with each of these, you can actually drill into the analysis. Oh, and I'm not logged in, that's annoying. In the interest of time, I won't. You do have to be registered to have access to that. But it basically shows you, it's worth stressing, our team actually look at all of these services. Oh, there we are. Nearly everybody that works within our business has worked in a financial advice business, either as an advisor or a paraplanner. So we really understand the issues you face from day to day. Our analyses do actually go into what the different tools. We're not just putting up a whole load of logos. We're actually giving, someone's just mentioned advisory AI. That's the summary we've got on that. With a number of these, you will also find videos underneath that show that what they can do. Anyway, let me go back to, sorry, I think that is just come off screen for a moment. Go back to the PowerPoint. And as I say, we've got Simon Cowley, Paul Miller, and Claire Bell. Are you with us now?
I'm here, yeah.
Lovely, lovely. Welcome. Thank you so much. Right, time to go into the discussion. I'm just going to give a quick overview for those that aren't au fait with the background to artificial intelligence, of what the different forms of AI are and how they have evolved, because I think a history lesson really helps people get it into context. So AI actually goes back to the 1950s, believe it or not, with the first rule-based AIs. These basically relied on explicit programming. They use if-then rules, and there's no learning or adaption. Next, we got on to machine learning, which really emerged in the 1980s. What makes that different is that unlike rule-based AI, it can adapt and change. Sorry, I should have given an early example of rule-based AI, which is very simple chatbots on a website, but I'll give another example about chatbots in a minute. Machine learning, as I say, it can adapt and change based on the data that it assimilates, making it more dynamic. You're using that form of AI every day, whether you realize it or not. Your spam filters are built on machine learning, and every time you use Netflix or a similar service, that's using machine learning. The next one after that is deep learning, which really came along in the 2010s. That's about using neural networks which adapt in a very similar way to the way that the human brain works, and it enables the differentiator there is that deep learning can handle complex data and tasks. A couple of examples, Siri and Alexa, obviously, but another one to a great example of deep learning is facial recognition that's used for unlocking smartphones. Natural language processing has actually gone on since the 1990s, but it advanced a lot in the 20-teens. This is all about specialized understanding and interacting through language, making communication more natural. That gets us into more advanced chatbots that can genuinely learn things. And a hugely interesting area at the moment is services like Google Translate. And there is a general view that within the coming year, you will be able to get your headphones will be able to translate in real time. That's just about emerging to us. A couple of other ones one that doesn't get as much mention as it might do, which is reinforcement learning. Again, emerged in the 90s, but moved a lot forward in the 20-teens. Learning through trial and error is essentially what we're talking about here. AI agents that learn to make decisions by performing specific actions and receiving rewards or penalties. That is all about learning optimal actions. A couple of examples of that are any of you that have got robotic vacuum cleaners. Perhaps the ultimate example is self-driving cars, which are a lot further advanced than I think a lot of people recognised. And of course, given the direction of the US government and a certain richest person in the world who has a vested interest, there is a general view that all the restrictions on self-driving cars might magically, in the US, might magically disappear. Somebody's just mentioned Riskalyze and Nitrogen. I know. I have the privilege of having known Aaron Klein, the founder, for many years. A great tech company in the US, originally known as Riskalyze, now broadened out to Nitrogen. Yes, there are several suppliers in the UK that in Europe that are similar. Lastly, we come to generative AI. Actually, that goes back to about 2014, 2015, but we're all aware that's really been supercharged in the last couple of years. And tomorrow is the second anniversary of ChatGPT being let loose on the broader public. It's kind of interesting, that one, isn't it? It's like no time, and yet it seems like it's been around for ages. An example I give, and I think when you're considering ChatGPT, you've got the first of the polls come up, which focusing on advice, it would be really useful for us to understand which of the different compliance processes would you most like to enhance using AI? We do actually have, by the way, an international audience. We've got, I believe, advisors on the call from as far away as Australia. And I'd say thank you to anybody who's well and truly up in the middle of the night there joining you. We've also got a number of people from the US. This is substantially a UK-based forum, but we welcome people internationally, and we really welcome your contributions and what you think. So, yeah, just coming back to Gen AI. It has been around longer than you might think. Deepfake videos are a classic example of generative AI. I'm having someone saying that the broadcast keeps coming in and out. Is anyone else having a problem?
No, it's fine for me.
Okay, good.
Seems fine for me as well.
Right. So, I'm just going to, well, I've talked through the different examples and use cases, key benefits for advisors, increasing efficiency, data analysis, greater personalization. Greetings from Cape Town. Thank you very much, James. Great to have you on board. Considerations to, and we're going to talk about some of these a lot today, data quality, transparency and trust. There's some quite interesting research published yesterday by Avaloq that says suggests there's a gap between advisor readiness to adopt AI and consumer trust. I'm not convinced on that. I'm going to have a little bit more of a look at that one. I know from conversations I've had with many advisors that they're actually seeing really good results and clients are embracing a lot of the AI. Not everyone's going to be the same. We do need to think about ethics and obviously the challenge of hallucinations. Really important if you're doing a Gen AI, anything with a Gen AI, tell it to be absolutely certain that it's only giving you facts, not to guess anything. Very quick examples of where you can apply those different AIs: enhanced client handling, automated portfolio management, suitability report generation is a really significant issue at the moment, virtual chatbots and assistants. I'm seeing more and more advisors doing that. And then risk assessment and compliance. And I've already done the demo on advisorsoftware.com, so I'm going to stop sharing and I'm going to, this is the point at which I'll bring in Simon, Paul and Claire. Perhaps I can talk, Simon, in our prep call, you know, you gave some great examples of how AI is making a real difference to your business. Would you like to share some of those with us?
Yeah, of course. So we've been using PlannerPal over the past kind of probably about 10 months actually. And we've seen a real uptick in kind of our advisors. So we've got four advisors in the business, including myself. And basically we all know the kind of, well, in my opinion, that the advice journey is very over-engineered, very clunky at the moment, and it's hard to get everything integrated, talking to each other. And I think if you're trying to do a streamlined process, what's being put on the advisor? What do we all want? We want to be seeing clients. We want to be bringing in money. We want to be looking after people. And from an advisor's point of view, we came on board with PlannerPal really early doors because we wanted to kind of work with a company who's early on in their journey so we can kind of mold it to how we work as well. And we work really closely with them. So the first part of what PlannerPal were doing, it's kind of like a glorified robot PA, I would probably call it, that basically you go have your meeting, you can record the meeting if the client's willing, or you can dictate notes after the meeting. So say if you're in the car, you're dictating your notes while you're in the car and hands-free, you're then able to click a button, it sends the client an email with everything you talked about and all the next action points. You know, that was really helpful. You know, instead of having to hire someone to do that sort of work, you can click through and do that. And over the past, as I said, 10 months, PlannerPal's been really like ramping things up. So we get we've got two paraplanners, if I can get my P's in correctly. And we're able to have the meeting with the client. Because it's been built with financial planners in mind, it knows all the jargon, it knows how we speak. And it basically is able to take the notes from the meeting. I send that straight off to the paraplanner with a fact find and you know, and everything else we do, and he's able to write the report, he or she's able to write the report and go from there. So it just really saves the advisor so much time just at the beginning of the process of what the advisor needs, so they can see more clients. And for us personally, we've been going just over 4 years and we've managed to go from 25 million of assets under management. Now we're at about 130 just over now within that 4-year period. And it started off with three of us and now there's eight of us in the business. And I said, we're a small business, but we really want to integrate technology, AI, so we can look after more people. And that's kind of how we've been doing it so far.
That's really, you know, very impressive growth rate. And when we were talking earlier in the week, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is you felt that you really wouldn't have been able to grow at the rate that you have done without the use of technology and AI. Is that a fair observation?
Definitely. Well, there's some statistics that Planapal and I have been going through, and we've worked out that it saved our advisors about nearly 30% of their time. Which is an amazing stat, really. And yeah, when we walked through it and talked it together and said it's made me, I've always been a big believer that an advisor shouldn't really have any more than 100 clients to service them properly. But now I have 140 clients myself, and I'm able to service them still in the same way as I did when we first started.
With so much attention, by the way, to, you know, so much focus on serving the underserved, and certainly in the UK environment, in the context of Consumer Duty and the FCA requiring far more evidence of ongoing advice to justify charges, that's a really powerful stat. I have just put in the chat, if any advisors haven't yet asked the question on screen, could you do so? Because there's another one coming up soon. Can I take the opportunity now to bring in Claire, if I may? You know, I think you've been using AI a lot to help you manage resources. And I think particularly you've been working with Recordshore, am I right? Give us a feel for what they're delivering to your business, and indeed, what's the impact been for you for managing resources?
Okay, I'll start by being frank that we're still quite early days, relatively speaking. We've had, we're still in the project phase, if you like, of integrating Recordshore. However, I'll start with the problem I think we had. We're an acquisitive firm. We're in a slightly larger than Simon's firm. We're around about 50 odd FP financial planners mark at the moment, but we do acquire a fair number of firms. And I was in the position, I'm the head of regulatory risk at Attivo, and I'm looking at how we keep our file quality and response to Consumer Duty, RMI, all that sort of thing under control without recruiting armies of file checkers and other sort of administrative and back office staff in order to do it. The big thing for me was what you needed to be able to scale, and it's difficult to see how these days you can scale without bringing the technology in that allows you to do it and manage volume as it grows, as the volume of the business grows, and be able to adapt to that quickly. Because for us, the majority of our new clients come from acquisition, so they're sudden hits of more clients rather than organic growth. So we have to be able to respond to that quite quickly. And that's why we started with that problem of how do we ensure that we can evidence that we're delivering services and delivering good suitable advice to clients without having to spend more and more and more on compliance and first line checkers and things like that. So we started working with Recordshore, and actually it moved from being something that resolved my problem in terms of compliance to something that actually we've stretched out further, and it's becoming a bigger impact on the business. And we're seeing similar figures, albeit we're still in the early stages with them at the moment, but we're seeing similar potential cost savings for financial planners through Recordshore, as Simon's talking about, sort of 30% of time